Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, March 26th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are gratefully available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages, it says Start Here. It will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And in that chapter, you will find a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. It's called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect over the last 16 years to improve my quality of life, manage my emotions, and turn any negative emotion into part of an infallible guidance system within me. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself absolutely free. Click on the PDF file, download it, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process and or called in to give testimonials about it or ask for clarifying information about how this deceptively simple process can be so powerful. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app. It contains the actual reality management worksheet process, an abbreviated version of that process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We encourage people to do that soon and often, because when you do that, it might raise a question, or you might come up with a comment that can assist us in learning this material better for ourselves and teaching it to others. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we'll see that you want to make a comment or ask a question and turn on your microphone, introduce you by your area code. Alternatively, if you're listening to this through the archives, you can send an email to Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org. Or you can send me an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. And we will do our best once we receive those emails to answer those questions during the show, and then they'll be available through the archives, as are the shows for the last 10-plus years. We've also been living into the commitment to talk about the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year. Today is the 85th day of the year, and this is another review lesson. This is a review lesson of lesson 69. My grievances hide the light of the world which is in me. My grievances show me what is not there, and they hide from me the truth that I would see. Recognizing this, what do I want my grievances for? They keep me in darkness, and they hide the light. Grievances and light cannot go together, but light and vision must be joined for me to see. To see, to truly see what actually is, I must lay my grievances aside. I want to see the truth of what is, and this will be the means by which I succeed. Some specific applications of this idea might be, let me not use this situation as a block to my sight. The light of the world will shine all of this in this current situation, shine it away. I have no need for this current situation or the meaning I'm giving it, and I want to see the truth of life. Lesson 70, review. My salvation comes from me. Today I will recognize where my salvation is. It is in me because its source is in me. It has not left its source, and so it cannot have left my mind. I will not look for my salvation outside myself. My salvation is not found outside and then brought in, but it is found within me, and it will reach beyond. And everything I see will but reflect the light that shines in me and in itself. Specific applications of this idea might be, let not this situation tempt me to look away from my true self for my salvation. I will not let this current situation interfere with my awareness of the source of my salvation. This current situation and my interpretation of it have no power to remove salvation from me. We've also made a commitment to work through the Course in Miracles experiment book by Pam Grout, and her chapter 85 is titled Fault in Your Stars. She quotes Eckhart Tolle as saying, the fault you perceive in another isn't even there. It is a total misinterpretation, a projection by a mind which has been conditioned to see enemies and make itself right. Pam writes, grievances show me things that aren't there. She suggests the song titled Once a Day by Michael Franti. But those other people, they're so scary. When Matthew Lester was 25, he joined the anti-Islam group, Britain First. He heard dangerous Muslims were infiltrating his country. He wanted to do something to help. But within a few months of joining the far-right group, he concluded that instead of tackling problems, Britain First, as a group, was exacerbating them. Its grievances, as this lesson emphasizes, were showing evils that did not exist. After admitting on Twitter, quote, I have been an unwitting twat, close quote, Lester showed up at the Crayford Mosque in southeast London. He was astonished at all the kindness and love he was shown. From there, he embarked on a month-long pilgrimage of penitence by visiting mosques all over London. He even apologized for letting his grievances show him faults that were not there. So, that's our lesson for today, the review lessons and our commentary. And we have 50 minutes left for comments, questions, answers, soliloquies, processing. We had a support group last night and stuff stuff was flowing. Stuff was flowing for me. I had notification right before the group of a good friend who is all but dead and completely gone mentally, who is exactly my age. And then we were in the group and people were talking about all of the different varieties of frustration and fear and angst that we create related to the coronavirus and the vaccinations, and as we always do in that group, we recommend that people use the tools to actively dismantle whatever excuses their mind is presenting them with for living in hostility or fear or judgment in any way. And so we have the opportunity to do that again here in this next hour. We are fully capable of doing worksheets if anybody has a worksheet they'd like to do. We are fully capable of discussing or framing worksheets for future use and or helping people process or sort out the processing they need to do on any set of issues. I felt like my head was one of those enormous church bells up in a tower with the clangor banging back and forth yesterday because of things that happened before the group, in the group, at the end of the group, right at the end of the group. One of our longtime attendees for years, she doesn't attend right now, but notice was given that her brother died very unexpectedly just the day or two before. And and then I got a couple text messages after group that were adding to the clanging. And I woke up this morning and all these thoughts were right back at me. The people, the deaths that I've been aware of within my family members of people in my caseload, friends of my own, siblings of friends. And what I know for certain is that my conscious logical mind cannot make sense of the complexities of this world. And so I'm grateful beyond words for these tools which allow me to recognize that when I have a strong emotion that I would label as negative or unpleasant, sorting it out with my conscious logical mind is counterproductive, but picking up the tools and applying them is highly beneficial. And that's what my weekend is going to be spent doing. I have already made the commitment to be doubling down on personal work this weekend because I've got family members in crisis and friends in crisis and my own emotional responses to those situations and other people that I'm aware of that say and do things that just don't make any sense in my conscious logical mind. And when that happens and my mind says, that doesn't make any sense, I realize I'm in judgment. And then I realize if I sit with it, negative emotions will come to the surface in my awareness. And once that happens, and at the current state in my life, I use that as an invitation to pick up a tool like the Reality Management Worksheet and actually explore what's happening in my consciousness that my conscious logical mind just can't keep track of or doesn't want to keep track of and keep suppressing. The more I do that, the better off I am because I had yet another person in my office yesterday who limped into the office with back pain. And this is a young person, a relatively young person, and he does an active job. He's not a couch potato. And he talked about how, you know, he was working at work, and he must have injured his back because, you know, after he was working, then he sat down, and when he went to get up, he felt this thing pull or snap or, you know, twang in his lower back. I didn't even begin talking to him about the potential connection between physical pain and our emotions. And I had said nothing to him about the work that I know that, and Dr. John Sarno's work, where he says, you know, the vast majority of back pain is unconscious rage. I just listened. And the very next thing out of this person's mouth was a story about how within the past week since our last session, I guess it's been a couple weeks since we've had a session, within the past 2 weeks, and within a week of today's session, he had a rage incident that he finds now very embarrassing and upsetting. But he, in public, raged. And he raged in a way that he's concerned it might have a negative impact on his job because it was during the time that he was supposed to be working. And as we discussed all of those emotions and issues, and he got some insights, and we talked about applying the reality management worksheet, just the mental short version. And we did some of that, and we reviewed the EFT tapping. He got up and walked out of the office without a limp. He literally just flowed in getting up off the couch and walking out of the office. No hint of the limp and the back pain that was so prominent in his experience at the beginning of the session. So I know that if I will live into the commitment I've made to spend extra time this weekend being aware of and processing my emotions, I will decrease the chances that it will manifest as a physical ailment in the near or distant future. And that's what we're inviting people to do. We're inviting everyone who chooses to pick up these tools and become an active steward of your own internal emotional life and allow the energies to flow. Keep your breath moving. If you know or if you like using the EFT tapping, which is basically a way to give yourself an acupressure treatment for anything that bothers you physically, mentally, or emotionally, step into the use of that tool with your breathing, with that calming breath that has you comfortably fill your lungs, pausing briefly at the top of the breath, and then resisting the exhale so that your exhale is 4 to 8 times longer than your inhale. And in doing that, you'll be triggering your body's parasympathetic response, and you will initiate that relaxed state from which your body does its best healing, cleansing, restoring, refreshing, rejuvenating, relaxing, and probably several other R words that I haven't put in that list. But the primary advice for me to keep my energies moving, to keep my emotional energies from lodging or locking into my body and causing physical disruption or disruption in the energy system that I experience as physical. The primary task for that is to allow, and keeping the breath moving is well, like Dr. Michael Rice likes to call the breath, the on-off switch for the body's emotional energy system. So if I keep my breath open and moving, I keep my emotional energy system on. And when it's turned on, my emotional energy system can process all of these energies and these emotions. So the person I learned about last night, right before the internet show, is somebody who was my brother's best friend in college. And my brother was in the Navy. They put him through college. And so he had to leave for the Navy right after he graduated. And his best friend from college basically just moved into the house and took over my brother's role as my roommate in my bedroom and stayed for 5 or 6 years, I forget exactly, but and became another, basically another sibling, another family member. And that, you know, that move-in period was, I don't know, 38 years ago, whatever, 35 years ago. So for the past 35 years, I have known of this person as a close family friend and had all kinds of very personal and intense interactions for probably 8 or 10 years before I got married. And the news is that he's had several strokes and he's got vascular dementia, doesn't really know who he is or where he is. And physically, he's probably not long for this world. And this was my brother's best friend from college. So this morning, after processing all of this last night, and woke up thinking about it, I made the time, do a little tapping, do a little breathing, and then I wrote the following email to my brother. Dear Tom, I've been flooded with thoughts and memories of you, Paul, your college, our family, since our brief call last night. I'm very sorry to hear about Paul's decline, especially sorry for your loss. I think often of your dedication to your friends and family, and I have some small sense of how immensely important we all are to you. Each loss like this requires a huge amount of emotional energy to flow through us as we honor our memories and our love for those we have lost. I will spend extra time this weekend honoring you, Paul, Notre Dame, your friendship, and the immense impact you and he have had on our family. Sending blessings and prayers to all of us. So as I breathe and tap, I encourage all of us to stay with these thoughts, these energies, these flows, and just let them be. Feel them fully and think in terms of allowing these energies to be within us, allowing these energies to be felt fully by us, and allow them to flow. To notice any tendency to tighten, to resist, to lock down, to say, I don't want to cry, I don't want to feel this. And to just keep the breath moving. And as I'm doing now, if you know, if you like using the EFT tapping, you can be tapping as you breathe, as you think about letting the energy, and it's the energy of all of the memories, of the good memories, of the sad memories, of the frustrating memories, of the anger-inducing memories. And if I keep my breath moving, and if I keep using the tools, I dramatically increase the probability that these energies will move through me, and I will have more and more open access to the loving memories. I will demonstrate to myself that I do not need to shy away from this sadness or pain or anger. And then I get direct, conscious access to the good memories. and the life learnings. And when the pain gets intense or wells up, or I notice I'm in a particular negative thought pattern, or notice a particularly strong negative emotion, we have the reality management worksheet, which is, as I say in the intro, is a tool I've been using to great effect for the past 16 years at least, to help dismantle the false belief that those energies, those emotions, are being caused by something outside of me. To understand that it's the interpretation I place on these events that my senses are describing to me that are responsible for any negative emotions I have. You know, I think about the richness of the life events that are associated with this friend Paul and the family, the ways that my family learned and grew and expanded by having exposure to someone like Paul. And if I can sit with any flood of emotions, positive or negative, and let myself review those memories and those life learnings, then I get better access to them. Then I get to have the benefit of that life energy and those wonderful interactions and the ways my life is better because of interacting with Paul. I get to have the benefits of those memories and those energies and those learnings. So we all get through these things. We get through them in our own ways. We all handle them. I remember I was recounting for someone this morning one of the gifts that my aunt gave me years ago when her husband died. And she and I were sitting alone in the living room after almost everybody had left and some of her adult offspring were in the back of this small house. And all of a sudden, what sounded like a fight broke out, and there was yelling and there was crashing. And I was sitting there with my aunt, probably in her 60s, late 60s, maybe early 70s. And I'm, you know, I'm a psychologist, and I'm supposed to have the answers. And I had no idea what to say or do when her adult offspring are in the back of this house fighting, and this is, you know, literally hours after we buried her husband. And she gave me a powerful gift. She simply said, "You know, Tim, everybody grieves in their own way." Basically just giving me permission to just be there and not have to make excuses for her daughters or try to fix anything. And basically letting me know she knew she was going to be okay. She was going to get through this. This is a message I've been trying to give people for the better part of this year. Everybody's going to have their own ways to deal with the life events, the politics, the coronavirus restrictions, the mask or no mask, the vaccine or no vaccine. And the best thing I know to do for anybody is help them process their own emotions and thoughts and to help them turn the focus of their attention to what they have control over. I don't get to control what other people do, whether they wear a mask or not, whether they want to travel or not, whether they want to get the vaccine or not. I don't have any control over that. And if I use my mind energy to judge them as right or wrong, good or bad, and then generate negative emotions in response to those thoughts, I'm causing suffering for myself. I'm also using energies in my energy system that are going to do things like suppress my immune system rather than boost it. And at a time like this, for those of us who like to be healthy, a strong immune system is always a good idea. And if I wake up and realize that if I spend any appreciable amount of energy in frustration or anger about what anybody else is doing, that's energy that does not need to be spent in that way, and that's energy that is probably going to decrease my vitality. So I can put it on a worksheet, and I can say, here's my thought. This person is wrong for judging me because I don't want a vaccination. This person is wrong for judging me because I do want a vaccination. Here's the emotion that I feel when I'm aware of that judgment and that negative thought. Here's the goal that I have, and cancel that goal and ask to be shown. And as I began this talk, my conscious logical mind can't even begin to comprehend the complexities of this life. Take any aspect of this life. My mind can't comprehend it. I can't comprehend the physical aspect. I can't comprehend the mental or emotional aspect. So I put it all aside and I ask to be shown something else. And time after time, I get freed up. I move some little piece of my consciousness out of that box that I've labeled too fearful, too sad, too anger-inducing to look at. And it moves out of that box into the box I call my conscious awareness, and there it loses its power over me. In the middle of all of this flood of things, in the past couple days, people I know that have died and people who've had friends and family members die, and I get a message from someone I haven't had any significant communication with in years, basically. And talking about, you know, hey, there's this thing that's yours, it's been in my possession for 16 years. You need to come get it. And it was like another one of those, you know, stimuli coming at me from the outside world. It felt like there was somebody ringing the church bell and the big clangor in the bell just going back and forth, and just my head was vibrating. And I realized in that moment, I need to do some worksheets on this. Because there's nothing about a text message showing up on a phone that's creating any energies in my system, especially not negative energies. So I put this on a worksheet. And from the irritation that I'm feeling at the beginning of the worksheet and the goal that I have very clearly for this person to, you know, see, to be emotionally sensitive and to see their impact on others, and I cancel that, and the irritation is gone, and what's in its place is deep sadness. And I recognize there's another layer of deep sadness about that relationship that, you know, if you'd talked to me about it last week or 2 weeks ago, I would have told you, no, I'm pretty well resolved with it. It's okay. It's, you know, it's been over for 16 years or whatever. And yet, one set of interpretations that I place on a text message vibrating at the right frequency stirs up irritation and frustration and confusion. There's another worksheet for me to do on the confusion, but the two I've done so far on the irritation and the frustration, both of them reveal deep sadness within me. Sadness, grieving over the loss of the relationship, grieving over all of the dreams that I had for how that relationship would unfold into the future. And already, even though I'm more in touch with the sadness than I was when I was feeling the irritation or confusion, it feels more workable. It feels like I can get through this better when I apply the tools. And before I started looking at the sadness, it felt like there was a pressure building in me with this irritation and frustration. And it seemed like there would be no safety valve, no release valve for this frustration and irritation. So again, this tool is available absolutely free at whyagain.org, or you can just go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And the next time you have a negative thought and you pour enough mental energy into it that it becomes the awareness of a negative emotion, you can map that out on the worksheet process. Figure out what your mind is telling you needs to happen in order for you to feel better. Cancel all of that and ask to be shown something better, different, more functional, and watch what happens. And this works for any negative emotion that I've ever experienced, for my grief, for my sadness, for my confusion, for my irritability. Area code 817, you're in the air. Who do we have?
Hello, Dr. Tim. My name is Terry.
Did you say Terry?
Terry, yes, with a T, as in Tim.
All right. Welcome.
Yes, and thank you. I want to start with a couple of questions. I have been, I'm fairly new to Michael's work and just am in the attendance of his online workshops right now. And there is a particular thing that has come up for me recently, but I want to ask a couple of questions first. Is the emotion producing the thought, or is the thought creating the emotion?
Our experience and our observation, tied in with neuroscience, leads us currently to understand that my thoughts create my emotions.
Okay.
And my emotions are just shadows of my thought. And one of the exercises that Dr. Rice does in one of his lectures is he has people let themselves to anger and feel it. And then take a breath and release the anger, and then let themselves go to sadness. Take a breath and release the sadness, and let yourself go to fear. And then he says, okay, now how many people were able to experience these various emotions? And it's pretty much everybody in the audience raises their hand. And then he asks, okay, what did you do to experience those emotions? And eventually everyone realizes, well, they sat there and thought about a time in their life when they had had those negative emotions, and so that's how they created the experience in the present moment. So this is just one of the ways that we can experience that we are thinking our way into our emotional states.
Mm-hmm.
And that if we sit and think negative thoughts that might be interpreted by some people as leading to anger, and we think them long enough, we begin to feel the energetic shift that we call the physical sensations that we call anger in our bodies. And then if we shift our thoughts over to something sad, we can start to feel the sadness, etc. And we encourage people to just observe this for themselves, right? I mean, it doesn't matter how many psychological, scientific studies there are that tell me that my thoughts create my emotions. If I can't observe it for myself, it's not useful to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Okay, and so it is the combination of some thought with an emotion that's attached to it that's in my unconscious, subconscious.
Well, this is the way we're talking about it these days is, you know, in line with science. If they did an autopsy on my brain, they wouldn't find Tim in there anywhere. And they wouldn't find my unconscious thoughts in one side of my brain and my conscious thoughts in the other. So it's basically your consciousness is your memory of everything you've ever lived through. And there is just your consciousness. But there are consciousness that you're happy to remember or willing to remember and things you've lived through, things that are part of your awareness and consciousness that you've labeled as too much or too fearful or too upsetting, and you're not willing to remember. So you block those off. You're actually using your own mind energy to block yourself from experiencing or remembering parts of your life experience. And that is the working definition we have for my unconscious. Some part of my mind that I'm aware of at a level that I've labeled too much for me to deal with or too fearful. And so I'm actually blocking myself from being able to be aware of it consciously. Michael Rice likes to talk about it in three different segments. We have what I'm actively aware of and thinking about in this moment. So I have this earpiece in my ear. I have a woman named Terry on the radio show. I've got my desk in front of me with my laptop. All of these things are in my conscious awareness. And then Michael likes to talk about the subconscious, which is all of the stuff that I'm not thinking about right now. But if somebody mentions it or it's triggered into awareness, it comes very easily. You know, like, what's your favorite band in high school? You know, what was the first car that you owned yourself? So things like that, if I don't have any emotional attachment to them, they pop right into my awareness. And so that was something I wasn't thinking about a minute ago, but now it comes easily to my conscious awareness, so we call it the subconscious. And the third section is that part that I was just referring to, where I've lived through it and I've experienced it, but some part of me that thought it was being protective labeled it as too much, too sad, too fearful, too anger-inducing, too hurting, too confusing. And so part of my own mind energy is being used to block my awareness of it. That would be the unconscious. So we've got the conscious that we're actively aware of, the subconscious that we're not currently thinking about, but there's no blockage to my remembering it and dealing with it directly, and then the unconscious where there's a part of my mind actively blocking me from remembering it.
Okay. Okay, yes, I remember hearing that before now that you are talking about it. And then, so the resonance that happens in me when I have projected something outside of me is the resonance, is it a character trait in a person that I see? Is it just a behavior? Is it a...
It could be any of that. And more than what it is on the outside is what I interpret it to be inside myself. So it's the interpretation that I place on the things that I'm seeing or hearing with my senses. And that's what creates the reaction I have. That's what's resonating with my past and my stored trauma energies, et cetera. The outside event isn't causing anything. I've never been triggered by anything outside of me. The only thing I've ever been triggered by, to use that phrase, is the interpretation I choose and place on the stimuli that are hitting my senses. What my mind is telling me happened and what it means, that's what's resonating the upset within me.
Okay.
This is how you can have some people that are, they're in a group of people and somebody comes up and says, oh, nice sweater. And the person they're talking to gets offended. And everybody else thinks, oh, he just gave her a compliment. Because she made it mean, or there was something in his tone that she threw an interpretation on that says he's mocking me, or that wasn't a genuine compliment, or... But she's the only one in the group that has that response. Why? Because of the interpretation she's placing on the vibrations that hit her ears.
Okay. So I guess I'll just try to go through the worksheet. So there is a person in my life who I am interpreting as extremely negative, and there's nothing right about anything, and something bad's going to happen, something bad's going to happen, something bad's going to happen, see something bad happen. And it's very difficult to be around this person, and what I feel coming up in me right now as I talk about this is there's some anger, there's a feeling of being manipulated, but then it kind of goes a little bit beyond that. There's an expectation and some guilt laying upon me that I have some responsibility to do something to make this person feel happy. You know, more visits, more phone calls, more letters, more emails, more pictures, more... So
to begin with, let me ask you to take a breath and soften and notice I'm hearing something, and I don't know you very well, so I might be, you know, interpreting this incorrectly, but I'm hearing tension at the very least in your voice as you talk about this. So take a breath and soften to begin before we talk about this anymore. Just soften and notice where there might be any tension in your body. And let me point out to you that in what you've already said, there's a big piece of denial that Michael Rice would probably point out to you if he were on the phone right now. And that denial is, you said, it's difficult being around this person, as though there's something outside of you that's causing a difficulty. And we just finished talking about how the only difficulty that I experience is going to be derived by the way I interpret and then respond to what I see as the outside stimuli. So to end the denial, you might say something like, I'm experiencing great difficulty just being around this person.
Okay.
And then it just changing the phrasing that way opens up my awareness, and I'm literally just a one step away then from asking my mind to show me how I'm creating so much difficulty or an experience of difficulty about being with this person. And then once I've stated it that way, in the very next few sentences, you can see what you just revealed to me about what's making this so difficult for you. And it's all inside you. It's not about the other person. And what you just revealed to me in you that's making this in you so difficult to be around this person is, you're operating from the false belief that you have to make this person happier.
Yeah,
so
I'm taking responsibility.
That's right. It will get infinitely easier for you to be around this person or to choose to not have as much contact with this person as you continue to do worksheets and cancel the goal that you are able to make this person feel better or happier or whatever. And the baggage in you that may go back, you know, hours, days, weeks, months, years, or decades, that you need to dismantle a bunch of false beliefs and traumas from childhood, they will come to the surface and you'll see, oh, that's silly. Oh, that's got nothing to do with my life today. And then those things will no longer be driving the energetic experience you're having that you're calling, it's very difficult to be with this person.
Yeah, okay.
Now, it all begins with learning to recognize when I make a statement that hides from me that I'm the one creating my experience, because that's putting me in denial. And the denial that we just specified was, you started by saying it's difficult being around this person, as though the outside situation was creating the difficulty. So when I say, I just rephrase the way I say it, and I say, I experience great difficulty being around this person. Mm-hmm. Now I'm only a step away from asking my mind, how am I creating this difficulty? How am I creating this frustration or this sadness or this guilt? And then I'm right at the threshold of being able to see that part of my mind that's actually creating that difficulty or that negative emotion and getting direct access to it.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It does, yes. I appreciate that. And it brings another question to my mind, which is a little bit back to my previous question. So it maybe looks like it's going a little bit off track. But this
denial.
That's
all right. Go ahead. What's your question?
Is this the definition of codependence and the victim mentality?
Well, they're tied together in this work, the way Dr. Michael Rice talks about it. So his definition for denial is when I think or act as though someone or something outside of me is responsible for my emotions or my experience internally. And the definition of a codependent relationship is anytime I think or speak as though someone or something outside of me is responsible for my emotional state, I've just created a codependent relationship in my mind with that person. It's just that simple.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you talk about Codependence Anonymous and the books Codependent No More by Melody Beattie and all these things, you can get a lot more complicated, sometimes usefully so, sometimes not so usefully so. But in this work with Dr. Rice, the definition for denial is at the root of his definition for a codependent relationship. Denial is when I think or speak as though someone or something outside of me is responsible for my emotional state or my internal experience. And I create a codependent relationship anytime I think or speak as though someone or something outside of me is causing my emotions.
Okay. I'm taking notes. Yeah, I bet this is in all the stuff that he's given us so far. Okay, my goal, yes. All right, then. I think that's it for now. I have had some other things that came up as I was processing through the worksheet. Last night I had some, underneath that anger was a feeling of uselessness, helplessness, powerlessness to have any control over a situation that would make a person feel happy. So, I mean, it tied in very nicely with that. Because I don't. I don't have the power to make a person feel any other way than they're feeling. So, but it was sad. It was really sad. I cried a lot about it.
Now, there's denial again. So remove the denial.
Oh.
Right? By saying, if I say it was sad, I'm saying by direct implication that something outside of me caused me to have sadness. And to be liberty to deal with it and change it, I need to understand I create sadness when I pour my mind energy into certain thoughts around that dynamic, whatever the sadness is.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, thank you.
And so then you can start looking at, okay, what are the thoughts right here that I'm using to generate sadness?
Yeah.
And put that on a worksheet and get access to another level of liberation for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very helpful.
But if I think, I hope so, because if I think someone or something outside of me is causing my sadness and I'm feeling very sad, then I either have to run away from that person or attack that person or bribe or seduce that person to try and get them to change what they're doing so I don't have to feel my sadness.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And
all
we're
right.
we're in an unusual situation here where Michael and Jeannie are not coming on in the next 2 minutes. So if you wanted, and I have the liberty today, unusually, some flexibility. If you want further help in either working through a worksheet or framing one out, we can extend our time.
I think I want to play with this a little bit. I think I want to play with the worksheet, but I've to see what comes up. I thank you for that. And I wanted to ask you about the episode that followed the program yesterday. I wanted to go back and listen to that again. And if you wouldn't mind giving me the date for that, the 12 to 1 portion. It was a replay.
Yep, hold on a minute. I will let you know. I have to scroll down to the... I have a bit of an awkwardness in the dashboard that makes me slowly go down through this. So this was Laura Coughlin, May 15th of 2018.
Oh, 2018, okay.
5/15 of 2018.
Got it. Okay. Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Kim. I appreciate it.
You're entirely welcome and far more deserving than you yet know. But that will be coming to you soon.
Thank you.
All right. Blessings. So we are here at the end of our first hour, and if nobody else raises a hand, we will launch into yet another replay for Michael and Jeannie since they are not here again today. And it's going to take me a moment to pull this up because because it's not coming. So our calling number is 563-999-3581. And soon we will have a replay going for Michael and Jeannie, if nobody puts a hand up. And they will be back on Monday. Apologies for the delay, but it it's not popping up in my email the way it normally would. So I suppose I will go back to the switchboard and scroll down. There was something she wanted me to do for a second show. So talk amongst yourselves. Apparently I'm having a technological glitch with my email. And perhaps it's not in an email. Perhaps it's in a text message, so I will have to look there. But we'll be back all next week. And you're getting the silence, the radio silence is solid demonstration of Dr. Tim's inability to multitask. Well, that email is just not coming up. So I will pick a file to play, and we will have an hour from Michael and Jeannie. Starting now, we'll look forward to hearing or seeing from you next week. We come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false.
Hey, welcome, everybody. Honored and delighted that you're here to share this space with us as we engage in the bringing forward of these awesome tools based in the first century Aramaic language and first century Aramaic thinking, where it was understood that we did not live in a physical world, but rather we lived in an energetic world. And the principles of how this energy system operates were understood far, far better than they are understood today, when we've been convinced that we live in a physical world made of physical stuff, and that physical stuff has capabilities beyond the power of what we're able to do as human beings, when we realize that we are back of and superior to, that we are the moving force behind what happens in our world. And so we're here to, in particular, bring forward the first century Aramaic idea of forgiveness, of what our culture teaches us, as our culture tells us that, of course, if you're in pain or you're in trauma, it's somebody else's fault that that's happening, and all you need to do is let them off the hook for what's happening inside of you, and then everything is okay. Now, of course, I could line up 7.5 billion people, shake each of their hands, and tell them how I forgive them, but that won't put one dent in the pain-producing power in my mind if it's there. What forgiveness does is it opens those parts of the mind where our pain is stored, and it empowers the release of those things. So when you think of forgiveness as removal or release rather than the act of letting someone else off the hook. And it's interesting to hear how many people talk about forgiveness and talk about how, yes, well, you know, it freed me, it did this, it did that. And I just doesn't make sense that because I let someone else off the hook, somehow that's going to change the content of my mind, or somehow that's going to change the ability of my mind to remove pain. Of course, you can, by quote-unquote letting another off the hook, perhaps break the link of the pain that your mind is producing with a particular object of attention. And by doing that, there will be a tendency for that relationship to improve. But what we're really looking to do is to understand that forgiveness has the ability to reach into the depths of one's own mind, and the technology of how to reach into those depths was developed over 2,000 years ago. And when we put it to work, it just creates the most amazing and powerful results. So we're delighted that you're here to have this conversation with us. And we'd love to hear from you if you're on one of those stations that we don't have access to in our control panel. Our calling number is 563-999-3581. If you're in the chat room and you haven't registered with Blog Talk, then you can't really talk to us through the chat room. You can do a simple registration process, or you can call us at that 563-999-3581. When you do that, you'll be listening to the show. And if you push one, that puts a hand up in the phone queue. Jeannie will know that you want to talk to us and introduce us by your area code. And so, Jeannie, do we have anything happening in the chat room, or do we have anybody with a hand up in the phone queue?
No, on both occasions. I'm the only one in the chat room, and nobody has a hand up. Camille was talking to Dr. Tim at the close of that show, but I think we completed with her. So, and you couldn't hear her, but when you were talking to Aria, she was giving you that snarl face, that scrunched up nose and all that. So, she wasn't saying anything, but she was giving you her little face.
Okay.
So we have 53 minutes. We've got plenty of time to do a lot of conversation. Press 1.
What's on your mind? How can we support you? If you haven't put the tool of forgiveness to work in your world yet, we invite you to go to your app store, whether you're on the iPhone or the Android. And as you do that, type in the words Heartland, Aramaic, forgiveness. Actually, you only have to put in the word Heartland and the letter A, and the app will come up on your list. If you click on it, install it, you have a totally private app in which you can carry out the forgiveness process. There are two different versions. You can select either of the versions of the wake-up sheet, either the current 7-step or a slightly more simplified one. And each one takes you to the same place. It takes you through the steps of forgiveness. The app is purposely, specifically designed to be totally and completely private so that you can put anything in there that you choose and no one has access to it but you. If you choose to print it, you can save it to your phone. But otherwise, when you exit that particular worksheet that you do, then it disappears back to the electronic components of which it is made and is gone. So you can be assured that it's totally and completely private, and we invite you to put it to work in your life and watch what happens. No belief required, or you can go to our website, whyagain.org. whyagain.org, and in the upper left-hand corner of the page, if you click on the Start Here button right up at the very tippy top of the left of the page, then you will be walking through all of the information that we could possibly give you on how to engage in first century Aramaic forgiveness. It's quite a shock to people when they realize that saying the words, I forgive you, or I forgive myself, have nothing whatsoever to do with actual forgiveness. What has happened is that the Greek act of pardoning, letting somebody else off the hook, I forgive you, I let you off the hook for what you've done, has been substituted for the actual process of forgiveness as it was taught in the first century Aramaic. And so in understanding how forgiveness works, it becomes something totally, completely different than this process of letting yourself or trying to let yourself or someone else off the hook, but rather it becomes a process of collapsing the current pained perception and dropping in and accessing what's beneath it, what's the root of that pain perception. And when you bring that energetic imbalance forward in the presence of love, then that which is at the root of your pain perception collapses. And as it collapses, you get free of the load that you put on yourself, or perhaps has been put into your mind over the generations by those who didn't know any better. Right, remembering that this body-mind unit is a device that registers everything that comes to it, and that every energy is recorded holographically in every cell of the structure, including the sperm and the egg. So if you conceive a child tomorrow, that child would have in its structure every thought you've ever thought, every feeling you've ever felt, every reality you've ever engaged in, every construct you've ever engaged in would be stored in your children's minds as that which your parents and their parents and their parents engaged in are stored within yours. And if we hide the parts of our minds away that we don't want to deal with, and the most powerful way to do that, or I guess I should say the most disempowering way to do that, is to pretend that whatever's going on in your mind, in your physiology, in your life is somebody else's fault. And so we have this blame game. You know, Patrick was sharing yesterday the insight that he and Joel had shared, that Joel was talking about how the blame has been going on for so long. You go right back to the creation story, and you know there was a problem ostensibly with an apple, and whose fault was the apple? Well, Eve had the snake to blame. Adam had Eve to blame, and then Adam turned around and blamed the Creator for giving him Eve in the first place. And so, you know, the blame game's been going on for a long time. What first century Aramaic forgiveness does is it totally frees one of the blame game and lets one see directly the contents of their own minds, which is that which is sourcing anything to do with pain. Events and circumstances. Short of somebody canceling the thought, coming up and punching us in the nose, all pain is caused by the unconscious internal dynamics of energies that don't belong within our structure, energies that are off the mark. Hence our definition from the Aramaic of sin, sin being an archery term that means off the mark. If you fired at the bullseye on the archery range and you missed the bullseye, then the scorekeeper would yell sin. And when you realize in human terms that sin is simply engaging in energy that is off the mark, you know, and of course, to determine what's off the mark, you kind of want to have a sense of what's on the mark. And the best way I've been able to come up with understanding what's on the mark for this human system is to establish from the very beginning what was the energy that it was sourced in. And the easiest way that I know to do that is just imagine yourself or remember when you've held a newborn child. And if you go back to the moment of holding that newborn and tapping into the essence of that newborn, what we found over the years is we've asked the question to people, what was your newborn experience like? Go back to the moment where you held that newborn baby and tap into the essence of that newborn. And we get all kinds of words that are all based in love. Words like sweetness, purity, beauty, peacefulness. We get words that are reflections of the state of our created selves. And then I ask people as they tap into that, because there's another trick that's been done in our culture, and we've been taught that love is something we're supposed to do to each other or we're supposed to do to ourselves. And yet, if you think about that moment where you held the newborn, you'll notice that the newborn is not loving you. You'll notice that the newborn is love. It's a state of being. It's what we are. It's the very, this state of active present love is our very lives. If you go back to Yeshua 2,000 years ago, he had a really simple explanation as to what he was about and why he was here. He said, I come to bring you life and bring it more abundantly. I come to support you having a taste of and living as the active presence of love, reclaiming your human life. And everything that he delivered is about the reclamation of our human lives, about the truth of who we are. And my offering is that any energy other than love that is put into this system inhibits our awareness of who we are, covers over the truth of the experience we're designed to have. And so forgiveness removes those energetic patterns based in hostility and fear that have in too many cases created false images in our minds of who we are, and we've fallen into identification with those false images. So what forgiveness does is it collapses and removes those false images of self, those false images of self as less than perfect, as less than whole, as damaged, as there being something wrong with, of, you know, something should be different here. By removing those interfering energies, we get to go back to the truth of who we are as human beings. And we get to realize that the energy that's designed to fuel this human energy system is the energy of conscious, active, present love. And that's what I offer Yeshua King to restore life, conscious, active, present love, and life more abundantly, to allow the full experience and the full expression, no matter what anybody else is doing in your world. You know, people say, who could be loving after watching someone pull off some atrocity? I'll tell you the person who could be loving after someone watching someone pull off some atrocity, the person who didn't have resonance with that atrocity. If you watch someone go into a fit of rage and there's rage in you, there'll be a tendency for there to be rage move. It's called resonance. If I forgive as to my rage, if I remove my rage, then what's left is the truth of who I am as love. And if I'm aware of that, then I can be witness to anything happening in the world. And if there isn't something in me that responds with a strong negative energy, then I will stand as a space of active love. If there is something that responds in me that takes me out of the awareness of myself as love, then I've bought into a false identity, and the idea of this work is to remove that false identity, to forgive that identity that's based in something other than love. The messages that have been given by the people around us and by our culture that we are so steeped in that we just kind of automatically, unconsciously buy into it, to start to question those things and to remove those things from our minds. That's the bottom line of where we're going with this work, and that's what we're here to support. We're here to support you having the tools, the awareness, and we're here to give the most total and complete support and knowledge and understanding of these tools that we have developed to date. Hopefully, you know, maybe in our interaction with you today, there'll be another piece for each of us to learn in our interaction so that we can support another with it, with that understanding at still a new depth tomorrow. So we're here not as experts, but rather recognizing that we're in process as everyone else is, and simply offering the space of support and the tools that have come from the practice that each of us has engaged in and inviting you into that practice. And then inviting you to pass that practice along to others. So that's what we're here to do. And we hope to be a blessing by being present with you. What's on your mind? How can we support you? If you're in the phone queue and push one, we'll be having a conversation. And we invite you to, you know, as you're doing your work, to keep a notebook with questions about, you know, even the smallest things that need to be understood about these tools as you use them. The smallest questions oftentimes lead to the biggest insights when we get into alignment with. And the whole idea is that of aligning with truth. We'll be doing an intensive in February here in Eastern Tennessee, a Laws of Living intensive. And we put forward in that intensive the Aramaic understanding of law, which has nothing to do with this culture's idea that law is the rule of a superior and you better obey. There's no obedience required under the laws of living in the Aramaic. It is rather harmonizing with or aligning with the energy systems in the energy field in which you live, move, and have your being. And as you do that, you live in harmony with law. And so if you're ready to take your work to the next level, drop Janie an email, J-E-A-N-I-E at W-H-Y, again, .org. Let her know that you're interested. It's a 16-day residential intensive. There's a textbook that's about 250 pages, and it's done in a different, completely different approach than our regular intensive. It's done in the Socratic method of asking questions. There are several essays, several tools that move into things like cleaning up grievances in the mind toward parents, toward others. It's just a whole series of tools that we engage in and a whole different level of understanding. We introduce the concept of regulatory speech. You'll notice during the radio show oftentimes, we'll stop someone in the middle of a sentence and say, invite them to go back and listen to this speech that they've used and recognize that our speech always tells us, if you listen to people's speech, you know, if you listen to the politician who says, well, we put forward this new bill and this bill is not going to do this, you know exactly where that politician's heading. They're heading to do exactly what they said they're not about doing, because our words always tell the truth of what it is that we're about. So as you listen to your own mind and you start to listen to your own words, when you have an interaction with someone and someone says, gee, well, you know, how were you feeling with that happening? Oh, I wasn't angry at all. Guess what? If I know how to decode my words, what I just said was, there's a part of my mind involved in the situation that's angry, and I'm in denial of it. I'm trying to hide that from myself. And when people hear that feedback, you know, oftentimes they'll be, oh, well, that's just not true. I didn't mean that. Or other times they'll stop, they'll take a breath, and they'll say, well, let me look at that. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, my goodness, I had no idea I had that kind of anger about this particular situation. And then, of course, we point out that to believe that you've got anger about a situation is to believe in a lie. You've never been angry about a situation in your life. If there's anger in your mind can select any situation. And if you live in denial, then your mind will tell you the story that you're angry about that. And so we refresh the mind on our definition in this work of denial. And denial is the act of thinking or speaking as though something on the outside is causing what's happening on the inside. You know, the common link, the common lie that's told in the culture is, you made me mad. You made me sad. You hurt me. You made me so afraid. You disturbed me so much. What I'm telling myself in this case is that there's anger and mad and sad and disturbance in my mind, and I'm pretending to myself, I'm believing that something outside of me is causing that. And when I do that behavior, when I language and express things in that form, what I'm telling myself, if I could decode the content of my own words in my own mind, what I'm telling myself is that there's a big part of my mind that I'm hiding from myself, and we call that process of hiding dissociation. If I want my mind to only show me evidence that you're the one who made me angry, then I have to dissociate from the cause of my anger. And I put this thick layer over that, so that I think I won't ever have to look at that again. And yet the energy of that anger sits within me, resonates, and tends to draw somebody else in through resonance to play that out with me. When I stop playing the game of denial, when I stop speaking as though something outside of me is the cause of what's inside of me, then I can invite my mind to show me the root of the energetic pattern that's causing my anger, my sadness, my grief, my rage, my pain, whatever it happens to be. And once I can confront that directly, and that's precisely what first century Aramaic forgiveness does, is it empowers one to precisely confront the part of their minds that they're hiding from themselves. And so when I can do that, when I can bring the hidden part of my mind forward, and I bring that forward in the presence of love, by exposure to that act of love, the trauma or underlying pain tends to dissolve, and I get free of it. So that's the genius of the forgiveness process from the first century Aramaic. And if you're out there listening and we can support you with a question or a thought, then just push one, raises a hand in the control panel. Jeannie will see that, and we'll introduce you by your area code. Jeannie, do we have anybody with a question for us? Anybody with a hand up in the phone queue?
No. We have many people on the switchboard, but nobody has put a hand up, and I'm still, there's one viewer and then me in the chat room, and that's it.
Okay. Well,
along the lines of what you're talking, go ahead.
No, you go ahead, sweetie.
I was just going to say I had a conversation with someone the other day, so kind of along the lines of what you're saying around the way that we speak, perhaps. In your words, I explained in my words, the person I was talking to was having an issue come up around an interaction with another person. And the tendency was, of course, to blame the other person. And having them to shift, having them shift their words to that it was their reality or that it was their impression instead of making a statement that was absolute about the other person. I don't know if I'm trying to explain it without exposing the actual conversation.
I hear you. Well, you know, you bring up a principle about the mind and how the mind operates, and that is that the mind is always reflecting its own content first and foremost. And when I language that the content of my mind is caused by someone else, then once again, I'm living in denial, but my mind is still going to show me its content. And the challenge is, especially when I'm dealing with content that I am pained about, is the whole culture has taught us, as we started to show out with this blame idea, the whole culture has taught us to blame someone else for it. And the genius of first century Aramaic forgiveness, it's a profound analogy of the mind, is that what happens is when I apply for this, when I'm standing in this space of having a conversation about that person out there and how they did this and it, their, what they did is responsible for my pain. In that situation, I'm dissociating from the internal cause of my pain and projecting my pain into my brain's image of them. So they show up with my pain attached, and I think that it's their pain. What first century Aramaic forgiveness does, what the technology does, is it collapses the pictures that are made by the mind that keep us believing, the perceptions that the mind creates to keep us believing that it's all everybody else's fault. And, you know, one of my tongue-in-cheek lines that I love to deliver is, you'll notice if you've been through a particular painful reality 87 different times with 42 different people, you're the one that was there every time. Your pain perception is about you. It's not about anyone else. And the very act of holding pain perception sets up a resonance that draws someone to me, and they'll tend to play off of that energy that I am literally radiating. When I hold an energy in my mind, energy by definition is motion, and anything that creates motion creates energy waves. You know, imagine I'm standing underwater. I'm in the ocean with a pail of water in my hand, and I'm spinning that pail of water. What happens as that pail of water that I'm spinning interacts with the ocean water? It creates a wave within the ocean. The very pattern, if I'm going, you know, moving rather quickly, then I slow down, then I go more quickly, then I slow down, the wave that comes off of the pail's interaction with the water is going to move quickly in one case and then slow down in another. So it's going to, in a sense, we could say it's communicating about the source of the wave that's being created. The wave itself is carrying the energy pattern of the motion that created it. And so if I hold, let's say, anger in my mind, and I talk about how everybody else makes me angry, I'm literally, those energetic patterns, by definition, energy is motion. And anything that moves creates an energy wave that communicates the source of the motion. And through what we call the law of resonance, I am, when I do that, unconsciously communicating to all the world about exactly what's going on in my mind. And it's almost like a cry for someone to come and do it to me. You know, what we know is that resonance creates motion toward in the human realm. Resonance is an energy exchange that causes people to be drawn into the space. And so when someone does a particular behavior that bounces off of that hidden part of my mind, then their behavior is going to tend to move that part of my mind in me. And if I can simply undo my denial, if I can simply say to myself, here I am with that old instant rage. I've been through this 87 different times with 42 different people. Why is it that this is going on in me again or still? If I can stop and own it and say, obviously, it must be mine. Although my mind is so expert at projection, my mind is so expert at making pictures up that it's all about somebody or something else. But sooner or later, I have to stop long enough to say, do I really want this response in me? And if I can say, no, I don't want this response in me, I got it. I've been through it 87 different times. There were 42 different people present, and every time my mind really produced a picture that was believable that this was about somebody else. But here I am at the source of it every time. And what forgiveness does is it collapses that projection. It literally collapses the world of reality. And reality is the output of the human mind. And when I can collapse that reality, it collapses in on itself. And when it collapses in on itself, I get to see the root energy, that which is back of and superior to the pictures my mind is creating, the projection that my mind is creating. And when I can do that, going on inside of me belongs to me, then I can begin to utilize the forgiveness process to...
He'll dial right back in. So he's talking about our perception and changing that perception. And that forgiveness does that. It collapses the projection we have, and then we see things differently. So while we're waiting on him to call right back in, there he is. Okay,
here
I'm not
real I can
sure
hear you.
What you said after you disappeared, but so maybe go back about five statements.
Okay, I can do that. I can do that. So what I was heading toward is recognizing the point at which it became apparent to me and I was shown what it is that brings real healing. And that when we are in that state of projection, when we're in that state of blaming someone else, there's a part of our minds, the part that's hidden, that is not available to us. And the genius thing that forgiveness does is it makes those parts of the mind available, and it makes them available in the presence of love. Looking back, you know, as I said, you know, 25, 30 years ago, I was, you know, just contemplating the previous years of working with people and watching situations where monumental healing took place, where just huge issues would break through and break down in people's lives. And it was like something that, you know, maybe somebody had done years of work on, and all of a sudden it was gone. They were done with it. How did that happen? Other people worked and worked and worked, but never really got that shift to take place. And after watching that for years, what became very apparent to me is that in order for healing to occur, two things have to happen simultaneously. One, the root, no longer hidden in the unconscious, one is face to face with and embracing it right there in the moment. And rather than embracing it out of their pain or their fear or their trauma, they're embracing it from the point of conscious, active, present love. You know, if you look at step four in the wake-up sheet, step four is where you bring forward purposely, consciously. You enter into the practice of bringing love, conscious, active, and present in your mind. And once you've done that, then you transfer your answer from step three, where you've identified the goal that's driving the perception. You transfer that goal exactly as it's written in step three to step five, and you cancel it, which seems like a really ridiculous thing to do. But forgiveness is the act. You know, the word forgive is shabag or shabak in Aramaic, and it means to cancel. When I cancel the goal that's driving the projection, the perception at the moment that you're the cause of my pain, that perception collapses in on itself, and it gives me access to the deeper hidden part of my mind. As that perception collapses, it opens a pathway into the hidden part. And once that hidden part is confronted and I can embrace it, I can bring it forward fully, full-blown, total memory of that experience in the presence of love, or, and that's when something is cognitive, or energetically I'm able to embrace that. I may not have cognitive awareness of what it was. I may not know what the memory was, but the hidden pain of it I'm able to embrace energetically and bring forward while either I or someone in the space is holding to conscious, active, present love. And when those two things meet, then the underlying pain exposed to the presence of love, literally the energy is transmuted. It changes its form, and I'm freed of it. That's called healing. And it doesn't matter what the disease is in your physiology that's being caused by that hidden underlying traumatic energy. It doesn't matter what the physiological or emotional disturbance or distortion is. It could be, you know, the ABC disease or the XYZ disease. It could be emphysema or cancer or heart disease or lung disease or diabetes. It doesn't matter what it is. If I can bring that energy which is off the mark, that's creating a distortion in tissue, forward in the presence of active love, then the distorted, the diseased energy, the energy that's off the mark, the sin, begins to dissolve in the presence of love. And when it does, whatever's at its root begins to heal. The physiological expression changes. And if we go to the opening words in the book of John, where we're told it says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. In Aramaic, that's not what it says at all. They understood much better than we do. What those words said was, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. That mind energy that I'm holding on to literally becomes my physiology, healthy or diseased. If it's a dis-ease energy, hatred, fear, anger, rage, sadness, grief, pain, drama, and trauma in any form, then wherever that energy is stored in tissue, if it's stored in the big toe, then somebody will look at the big toe and say, the big toe is distorted. You have the pig toe disease. Of course, they'll give it a fancy Latin name, and they'll have a fancy drug to try to manipulate it into suppressing the appearance of the symptoms that are there. If you take that very same energy and you put it into the kneecap, somebody will look at it, they'll have a fancy long Latin name, probably a longer name than the one for the toe disease, and they'll say you have the whatever kneecap disease. If you take the same disease energy that creates the kneecap disease or the toe disease, and you put it in the lung, the heart, the liver, or the brain, then somebody will look at it and they'll see the anomaly. They'll see the distortion of the heart, the lung, the liver, or the brain, and they'll say, ah, you've got the heart, the lung, the liver, or brain disease. We got a fancy name, and we've got a really expensive drug to see if we can manipulate that energy. What if you understood that it's all energy? And if you have the big toe, the kneecap, the heart, the lung, or the lung, the liver, or the brain disease, you bring love present to that part of your structure, and that part of your structure instantly reorganizes into health. And there is what people call miraculous healing that occurs. It's not miraculous. If you're listening to the show yesterday, Patrick McGann called in. Patrick's been a friend of mine for 40-plus years, and he mentioned that 23 years ago he was at Heartland and did several intensives and kind of let the work go and moved on. And he came back this past summer, having allowed himself to get to the point where, with diabetes, he could hardly walk. He literally had to stop due to the burning pain in his feet. He had to stop just walking up a single flight of stairs 3 times. He could, he's in his 70s, he could wake up in the morning and do 2 to maybe 3 hours work, and the pain in his feet. You know, someone would go in there and say, well, you see, these are nerve degeneration. This is, you know, diabetes at its worst, and it's just the way it is. He's going to live with that till he dies. Well, if you listen to the show yesterday, Patrick was telling us that he's now up to working 7 or 8 hours. He spent 50 days at Heartland this summer. He's up to working 7 or 8 hours. And he has no burning pain in his feet. None. Now, that's not possible for a 72-year-old man to do after having diabetes for years. For those who were with us at Heartland this summer, who watch Patrick, and you know, we talk about the general rules of where energy gets stored within the structure, and the tendency for the pancreas to be distorted by pain is usually caused by grief. And for those who were with us this summer, you remember this tough guy, and Patrick's, you know, martial artist, military guy, tough guy. And you'll notice how many times Patrick dropped into with the support of the whole group. And this, he went through about three or four rounds of dealing with having been in training in the military in Korea, and that they are doing mock battles between different facets of the U.S. military, and where his team won this mock battle, and some others on the other side were angry that he led the team that beat them. And he shared with the group, opposing team captured him. These are his own men. These are the guys that he's training with and working with. They captured him. They hung him upside down by wires just a couple of feet from the ground and set off a tear gas bomb in his face. Now, if you were there to watch Patrick this summer as he coughed and just the energy being processed out of his lungs, he went through at least three, maybe it was four rounds of this just deep, gut-wrenching coughing, crying, tears, grief, and pain as he had the remembrance of this being betrayed and tortured and learning that there was nobody he could trust. And if you remember the look on his face, anybody who was listening that was there this summer, remember I was like, I just couldn't understand. These are my own guys. What are they doing? Torturing me. And I mean seriously torturing him. But Patrick went from where there were three stops in order to go up the steps to where he was walking his dog at Heartland. And for those who've been there, you know, there's this big circle around the property and then the road that goes down to the lake, the road that goes up to the top of the hill. He got to the point where he'd walked that whole road with his dog, a mile to a mile and a half every day with no foot pain and without stopping. Now, people would say, no, that's just not possible. He's got the physical result of the physical disease called diabetes. Excuse me. If you believe there's such a thing as physical, you're living in a fantasy world. Let's listen to Einstein as he says, on such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy, energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. Einstein tells us matter doesn't exist. Max Planck, when he was receiving the Nobel Prize in Physics, back at the turn of 1900s, Max Planck, as a physicist, says this, as a man who spent his entire life studying matter, I can tell you this much. There is no matter as such. Our entire world is made of succeedingly smaller patterns of vibratory fields, one nested within another, nested within another. Do you have a disease going on? What have you nested into the tissue? And I don't care whether it's the big toe, the kneecap, the liver, the lung, the heart, or the brain disease. What have you nested into the big toe, the kneecap, the lung, the liver, or the heart to create that distortion? What's the energetic anomaly there? And can you access that and bring it to the presence of love for dissolution, for forgiveness? And that, my friends, is the essence of. So that's the essence of the healing process. And when I can bring that nested frequency, that underlying energy forward to conscious awareness. Now, it can be cognitive. You know, in the case that I just shared with Patrick, he's right back hanging upside down in the tree, remembering, and it was interesting to watch his gyrations as he would tip himself over almost upside down to cough out tear gas, to cough that out of his lungs, to cough that energy out of his body. And as I lift the overlaid energy from the tissue that's been distorted. Yes, somebody will look at the tissue and they'll say, see, it's supposed to be shaped like this, but it's shaped like this. So we know it's disease. Well, what's happened is the energy that's been overlaid on the tissue is what has created the distortion. And when I remove the overlay, and the removal is the act of forgiveness. When I remove the overlay, the big toe, the kneecap, the lung, the liver, the heart, or the brain, whatever it is, goes back to a fully healthy state. The energy is always willing and ready to spring back to full expression if I'm willing to face, bring love present to whatever I'm hiding from myself. And that's the essence of the miracle of healing. You go back to Yeshua, and of course, there's this whole magic story about this magic man who fixed and healed all those people. But you'll notice that in those healing stories, when those people wanted to turn to him and say, wow, look what you've done, what did he say to them? Now go read the story of the woman who has this issue of blood. She has a continuous menstrual flow and has had that going on for 12 years. She has this inner knowing that if she can touch the hem of his garment, does that mean she wants to touch a piece of cloth? No, that's a metaphor for being in the energy field of empowerment for healing. When she touches into his energy field, she is vitalized and empowered, and it's that high vitality state that allows us to recapture from tissue the overlay that creates the disease and the distortion and remove that distorted energy. And you remember when everybody wants to make him the hero, he says to her, woman, your faith made you whole. The action you took made you whole. Yes, I was here as your support. I held the space for you. But it is your work that made you whole. If you are going to heal in your life, it's your work that will make you whole. And Yeshua provided the exact tool for how to do that. Once again, the tool is called forgiveness. Forgiveness is the tool with which you reach inside the hidden parts of your own mind, which reflects as your physiology. You access any dis-ease energy, any energy that does not belong, and you remove that energetic pattern. Removal is the act of forgiveness. Take the overlay off the pancreas starts to function again. Take the overlay off of the heart, the brain, the lung, or the liver, and that tissue begins to act in full function again. It looks distorted and diseased because of the energetic patterns of disease that have taken the tissue over. Breathe, forgive, access and remove what doesn't belong. Bring forward the presence of love. Put a smile on your face and activate the frontal lobes of the brain where Rachma resides. And in the presence of that act of love, all dis-ease energies begin to be removed from the system. Feed the system what it needs to be fully functional, and you'll function as a human being again. We're here to support at depth the understanding of the principles by which that healing process operates, and to be the space and to empower you to understand the principles and then to enter into the practice of using the tools
that empowers that energetic shift to take place. And such things as the burning, searing pain in the feet of a man who's been 5 decades holding the grief and the pain of being betrayed by his own men. Embrace that energy in love. Dissolves the overlay that causes the thing they call diabetic neuropathy. And the feet move in a healthy manner. And the man walks for miles, where before a single flight of steps was more of a challenge than he could handle. It's so awesome to watch the process occur. It's so awesome for people to step into the use of that tool. Again, if you don't have the Forgiveness Wake-Up Sheet available to you, go to your phone app store, type in the words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, download the app, and put it to work. Or go to, go to our website, whyagain.org, upper corner. Click on the Start Here button, and you'll be utilizing the first century Aramaic forgiveness process and learning everything that we've come to know over the period of almost 50 years of working with this tool. That's what we're here to share with you and to make yours. And so we're down to the last minute or so. We're honored and delighted that you're here with us to be part of this conversation. If this show has been meaningful for you, when the show is over, you can go to whyagain.org and click on the microphone on the page. Go to the archives. You can save the MP3 to your phone or to your computer, or you can copy a link. You can send the file to someone or send someone the link and have them give a listen. In the meantime, we're here to support you creating the best year yet of your eternal life. That is an awesome gift to give the world, and we're here to support you getting it. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.